I don't think a lot of people realize how much goes into the planning and development of a vineyard.
And I look at Sauvignon Blanc too, as it can be very transparent of the farming style.
A lot of people don't realize Sonoma County is 1 million acres. Makes us about the size of Rhode Island as a state.
For most people who are really into wine, being a wine dude, a wine nut, or whatever you want to call it, I think they all have a wet dream to make their own wine eventually.
I really have fun with doing my job, with doing wine, with being viticulturist.
You know, to stay out of the vineyard, I only have the shotgun for the boar, and I'm thinking, great.
As much as I love Chardonnay, I didn't want to spend my nights worrying about it and my days talking about it.
I worked 14 hours the day before I went into labor. I was determined to get most of that Chardonnay in.
In another beautiful, sunny day in Napa Valley, in a room full of half crazy, half passionate people. I mean, how bad could it be?
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 186. This week we feature Clemens Legater of Alois Legater 1823, Italy. Last year, we interviewed Italian winemaker Alois Legater of Alois Legater 1823 while he visited Milwaukee. That was podcast 155, July of 2015. 2 weeks ago, we interviewed his son, Alois Clemens Legater, at Tesori Restaurant in Chicago. Clemens has joined the family business after years of garnering experience in other areas of the industry. Family is always the common element in the wine industry, and Clemens is off to a great start. We're at Tesori Restaurant in downtown Chicago, just off of Michigan Avenue, in fact, on Adams. And I'm here with Alois Clemens Legater of Alois Legater Wines. How are you?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Now, to many of our listeners, they may remember we met your dad last year and did an interview with him, which was great. Yeah, and he's just a terrific guy, a real pleasure to talk to.
That's good. That's good. I'm very glad to be here this year or this time and, tell you a little bit my story and... After that, you already met my father last year.
Well, I guess my first question is this your first time to Chicago, or have you been here before?
It's my second time, actually. I came to Chicago last year. It was my first time. And actually, after joining the company or the winery last year in May, actually, it's now even exactly 1 year. And last time I've been here was the first trip to U.S., the official trip, let's say.
Mm-hmm. So... You've been here before, though, for more personal reasons.
Not to Chicago, to U.S., yes. Many times, but not for working for our winery.
And now you've had an example of the crazy big city.
It's crazy, yeah, especially now during the draft.
Yeah, right. There's traffic. There's all kinds of things going on. So you said a second ago that you've just recently joined the company, which I didn't know. So let's talk about that. You've obviously been around for a few years, and you haven't actively been involved with the business.
I was living abroad for the last 9 years, and I'm very happy for my, let's say, childhood. Like, my father never, even though if the winery, it goes back to 1823, so it has a huge history, and now it's run in fifth and sixth generation. The coolest thing about my parents were that they were never giving me certain pressure to run the winery at one time, so they always said, you should do whatever you want to do, go out, learn whatever you like to do, and if you like, you come back. And that's what I've done at the very beginning. I studied at the very beginning sociology in Zurich, so something completely different. As during school, I always really enjoyed philosophy and history, so I studied, went a little bit in a different direction, but then at the very end of this study, I started to work for our importer in Switzerland. And I got the passion again about wines and starting to work in the logistics. So I was working in the morning, delivering wine to all the restaurants. And then I went to the university, and this was actually back to recontact with wine. I was grew up in a winery and I knew everything, but that's That was the point when I got back. And then after that, I decided to study viticulture in Geisenheim. That's a small town, but quite good, very good school in Germany, near Wiesbaden, near Frankfurt. And after that, I went to Burgundy, actually, going on with the studies of enology, so winemaking. But I decided there to quit the studies and rather to work in a winery in Burgundy, in Volnay, for Marquis d'Angerville, just for a short time. And after that, I went to New York, actually. Just for a very short period of time. But I did a short internship at one of our distributors. What was really great, it was my first contact actually with the US market, the wine market actually, and it was great. Living in New York at the age of 25, 26 was amazing, even if it was short. But anyway, after my experience in New York, I went back home for another couple of months to reintroduced actually in the winery, in the family winery, and it was the way where I really got into it, the passion. And that's a beautiful thing, that it was a free decision to go back and to start it, become a winemaker, become a vintner actually. But before getting back for sure, I decided to go for 2 other years to Luxembourg, where I was working in the food industry, so it was nothing to do with wine. It was a biodynamical organic food industry, a food cooperative actually. So it was very interesting to get to know a little bit the biodynamics aspect, the organic aspect, the organic food aspect in general, before getting specialized into the wine business. And so, this was for 2 years, and last year in May, I started. Came back to Alto Adige after 9 years, and joined the family winery.
May I ask a personal question?
Yeah.
How old are you?
28.
Okay. I'm not good at the age thing anyway. I just wanted to get an idea. I'm guessing there was maybe a bit of a hope on your dad's part to see that you go that way without him, actually saying anything?
Probably he was hoping for. That's for sure. Or I hope so. But, I have 2 sisters, one older one, and Anna. And the younger one, Helena, and they have decided to not join the company because they weren't maybe so interested in. We are now working a lot with my older sister, as she has an event agency, and as you probably know, that we have our Summa. So during the Vinitaly, we have our own winery event with other 70 wineries from Italy, from Germany, from Austria, from Champagne, from New Zealand, in our estate. And she's organizing these events, and other events during the year. So she's like our event agency. We're working really well together, but she's not in the wine business. And then my younger sister is studying film in London,
really?
So she's also doing something similar to you. she wants to get a producer actually, and so hopefully she will do our films in future. But anyway, so they weren't they were having or looking for a different path, and I hope that my family is actually happy that one took this decision to take it over, nowadays I'm with my father, like the fifth and sixth generation runs the business, and actually we're quite a good team, I have to admit, and yeah.
And your dad's not actually retired at this point.
No.
So he's still got a ways to go.
Way too young.
Yeah.
No, but the good thing is that even here, like when I was living in Luxembourg for the last 2 years, we met once in a while, talked about how my entry should work out and how I should get in the business and what should I take over certain areas and departments or not. And so it was very surprisingly that we met once in Frankfurt for a weekend, and we had breakfast, and then he said, well, the first day I, you get in the winery, I will give you all the responsibilities from the whole winery and you will decide. And I will stay there, but you're going to decide. And I was like even shocked. And I was like, okay, I mean, that's a lot of trust. And that's amazing. It was amazing, but I refused it because after 9 years living abroad, I couldn't manage the whole winery. I couldn't be responsible for winemaking. I couldn't be responsible for viticulture, for, we have a small restaurant there, for our employees. I couldn't be responsible for the financial part. So what we did is we split the responsibilities. So he's now in charge much more, even though he's working also and traveling around, but he's, and I'm also working in the winery and winemaking and viticulture, but he's more in charge now, or he's responsible of the whole internal things, that means employees, financial, winemaking, viticulture, and I'm responsible more, or at the moment, or I'm focused to travel around, to get to know our partners, because we're, for us, all the export is quite important. So, I mean, we have very long relationships with many of the many of these partners. So it's important to get to know them and to get to know the market and slowly, slowly take over the other areas.
I want to bring up two things real quick. One is our listeners, as we go through this interview, the rumbling in the background is, of course, the L, which is right outside the window. So we're not experiencing a classic California earthquake because we're not in California. The other thing I want to point out, which we talked about with your dad, was your accent, because you're in the northern part, northern northwest, if I remember correctly?
Northeast, actually.
I'm sort of trying to picture it in my head, right? I got it backwards. The northeast part of Italy, and so you're a little closer to Austria, mm-hmm. So you have a very different accent than what would be considered a traditional accent.
Yeah.
That makes a great deal of difference when you're listening to somebody you think is Italian, and of course they are Italian.
That's true. That's a fun part about Alto Adige. I mean, if you look at Italy, every single region is so different from each other. I mean, if you go to Piemonte, it's completely different to Tuscany. And if you go to Tuscany, it's completely different to Sicily or Puglia or Calabria. And there's one little part, Alto Adige, that is even more different than the whole rest of it. Alto Adige is one of the smallest regions. It's very interesting because the fun thing about it is that 100 years ago, so before the First World War, it was actually part of Austria. And you know that Italy and Germany and Austria were on one side and fighting against the alliances, but then Italy in the middle of the First World War flipped to the part of the alliances. And so the alliances were saying to Italy that if you would flip, we would give you, as a gift after winning the war, the southern part of Tyrol. And Tyrol is this very famous region of Austria. And so after the First World War, when Austria lost the war and Italy won the war, and they cut the Tyrol in two pieces and gave the southern parts to Italy. So the whole region became Italianized, but it's still nowadays, it became part of Italy, but still nowadays 70-75% of the whole population speaks German, or let's say Austrian. It's a certain dialect. And that's a fun part, I think. It's like this very interesting melting pot of two different countries. Now you have on one side the Italian culture, of course, after 100 years living in Italy or being a part of Italy, it's already gotten like pizza, pasta is very common, of course. But on the other side, you have like this Austrian culture, like the language. Everyone speaks two languages now, German and Italian, of course. And there's a third, even a third language, it's called Ladin. It's a small retro-Roman language.
That's sort of a localization?
That's local in one valley, it's like this. And then we have also like Austrian food, like it's not only pizza and pasta or anything Italian, but there's also a lot of Schlutzkrapfen, Knödel, Wiener Schnitzel, so these kind of things.
You've kind of captured the best of all worlds.
Yeah, not bad. We're lucky there.
Yeah, I'd say.
And it's a really beautiful area. I have to admit that after 9 years living abroad, I was kind of scared also to get back to Alto Adige because, I mean, it's also a very small region. I mean, the biggest town has 100,000 people. But I have to admit that it's extremely beautiful. It's in the middle of the Dolomites, in the middle of the Alps. So whenever you want to, you just 10 minutes, get in the car for 10 minutes, and then you're out of, in I don't know, in the middle of nowhere. just in the middle of the mountains and enjoying the silence. And that's what's beautiful about it.
Well, especially after being in a city like New York, I mean, that would make a great deal of difference.
Especially here in Chicago with the draft and the whole crowd.
It's right.
So that's a shock.
No, and the L a few feet away, yeah. It's not quite the idea of being in a peaceful area, you know?
But that's the beautiful job. That's the beautiful about our job. I mean, you're, whenever you like, in the middle of the vineyards, and then you go just in the cellar, for the winemaking, and then if you can, you just travel around 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 1 week or just certain days, and you get out, get new inspiration, get new inputs, and then you come back and try to. And that's a beautiful about a family winery. You always can try to put your personality in the winery or in the company. So that's a beautiful thing. You travel around, get information, get back, and trying to realize them.
What a great place to live. Well, let's talk about the winery itself. As I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, you do practice biodynamic farming, is that correct?
Yes,
And that's something that obviously has gone on in Europe for much longer than it has here in the United States. Is that a fair thing to say or no?
I don't know. I mean, there's a difference. I mean, the whole biodynamics or the whole anthroposophy, where the biodynamic is coming from, or this philosophy, started about 120 years ago. And agricultural farming, let's say biodynamic farming, was in agriculture, like in food industry, was very known for a long time. In the wine industry, wine business, it started 20, 30 years ago, maybe in Burgundy, then the first in Italy, some in other parts of France, in Loire Valley. Now it's getting really, really big. It's very interesting to see that now the food in the winery, like wineries, are changing a lot to biodynamic. Instead, in the food industry, there's like a stable evolution. It's not really going on anymore, even though the demand is really huge. So I don't know when they first started in the US, but we have some experience. But when we started in Alto Adige, it was about 2004. So we did the first experiments already in the 90s. And my grandmother always already farmed her garden in a very biodynamic way. So she was pruning when the moon was near or far. Like, it's like you're using this, or you're trying to think or think of these certain cosmic influences as well while you're working. And so we started, but there's a huge difference if you have like your garden farmed biodynamically, or if you have 125 acres farmed biodynamically. So we started the first experiments in the 90s, but didn't really, we haven't had a really success, because if you don't really get focused on doing a certain thing differently than you did it in the last 20, 30 years, it's difficult to get results out of it.
It doesn't happen overnight.
No, absolutely not. It's a process, and that's the most important thing about biodynamic. But then finally in 2004, we converted all our vineyards to biodynamic. For Alto Adige, still was extremely young. I mean, there was one winery called Loacker that was studying 20 years ago, but in a very small scale, let's say, or they didn't really talk about a lot. And so there weren't other people like getting convinced about it. And so in 2004, when we started to convert, also our neighbors were laughing about it. So it was kind of news things. And everyone was saying like, okay, that's now going to be the end of this family winery. Mm. But now, I mean, it's a beautiful how this things got developed in the last years, and also in the mind of people, like they're being consciousness about it, and thinking, yeah, okay, I mean, they see that it works, and they see our vineyard that it works, and now slowly, slowly, more and more farmers getting convinced and convert their vineyards as well. So,
no more laughing; they're starting to pay attention.
Yeah, that's right. A good thing. That's absolutely a good thing about it.
Well, let's talk about the wines. You make a number of different kinds of wines, and I'll let you go ahead and kind of walk through what you have, what you offer here in the States specifically.
So the thing is about Alto Adige, even though Italy is mostly known for red wines, Alto Adige is actually one of the best white wine region we have in Italy, because probably of the northern, because it's one of the northernest region in Italy, because of the climate, because we have really warm days but very cool nights because of the influence of the Alps, because of the Dolomites. and we have many different soils. During the stone, metamorphosis, you have extreme diversity of different soil types. You have limestone, chalk content, you have porphyry, you have granite, you have marble, you have beautiful diversity of soil types, and that makes it possible also to plant many different white wines. And you have to think about that Alto Adige 40 years ago, so the history is quite short, was actually known as low medium quality red wine region. And in 40 years, when my father started out to take out the plants of the red grape varietal we had planted there, the Schiava, a lot, and what at this time was known as a much more like a mass productive wine, what became now a good wine, but he started to take out this grape varietal and started to dig in or plant white wines. And now the region is very famous, especially for Pinot Grigio, for Pinot Bianco, Chardonnay. We have Gewürztraminer, we have Müller-Thurgau, we have Sauvignon, but also on the other side, Schiava, Lagrein, so also some red wines, especially Pinot Noir. There's a huge, very good potential for it because we have the right soil types, the right climate for it, what the Pinot Noir likes. So I would say the focus the most important wines for Alto Adige for sure nowadays, white wines, like about 60%, is planted with white wine, with grape varietals. We in our winery have about 75% white wines, and the rest would be red, absolutely. And what our most important wines are for sure Pinot Grigio, Pinot Bianco, Chardonnay, then I would say Pinot Noir and Lagrein. Lagrein is an indigenous grape varietal. I would say we have two red grape varietals that are indigenous, that is the Schiava and the Lagrein. And then we have many small white wines, what nobody knows about, Blattele or Frauel or Fasolen. But anyway, but Lagrein is a very interesting grape varietal because it's normally used to be planted in very sandy soil and a very hot climate. And that Bolzano, the main town of Alto Adige, is one of the hottest cities in Italy, you know, during the day. And Palermo or Florence or Rome, so it's quite hot, getting quite hot there. And it's what Lagrein actually likes. And Lagrein is a grape varietal that is related to Syrah and Teroldego from Trentino, and it has a nice acidity, so a nice freshness of the wine, very soft tannins, not too rough, and the typical characteristics are often like this day. The wine has this nice earthiness, this spiciness, what it needs. I would say these would be the different grape varietals we're focusing at.
When you're introducing some of these wines here in the States, the lesser known grapes, the ones that are more indigenous grapes, is that difficult for you to sell those grapes to people here?
I mean, I'm talking about the indigenous grape varietals here in the U.S., for sure just the Schiava and the Lagrein, no? I mean, all the others doesn't mean they're nearly not even, they're not even planted anymore widely. So it's not the easiest thing, because everyone probably knows better Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinot Noir. But I think there's a certain interest, especially in the cities, for these grape varietals and to experience new things. And I think especially Italy has so much to offer about this point. From this point of view, I mean, in every single region you have this extreme diversity of different indigenous grape varietals. No? I mean, Tuscany has completely different ones to Piemonte, and Alto Adige has again different ones to Sicily. And I think nowadays people are more interested in getting to know this very tiny new things that are very special for the certain region. And therefore, I think Lagrein and Schiava are very interesting for the future.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the more Americans learn about wine, especially learning about European wines, the more they do want to experiment. I mean, you look at something like Georgia, obviously parts of Italy, Portuguese wines, things like that. Mm-hmm. Fair to say?
Absolutely, yeah, I think so too. Yeah. And I mean, it needs time, but even now, I mean, last year, and if I compare last year from this year, it seems to me that already much more people know about Lagrein than they did last year, and maybe the year before. You know, it's like a process, and that's it. I think you need to see it like a process, and that's life. You know, and then people get to know it getting people get to know it, people get to know Alto Adige, maybe they come. I mean, Alto Adige is also, it's very small, but nowadays it's gaining on reputation, and this needs time.
I guess you and your dad are doing a good job.
I don't know, I hope so. It's not us that can say this, it needs, there's always, we know to get it from other people, but I hope so.
I think this is probably a bit of a silly question, but and I'm assuming obviously you don't have any children in your life yet.
No, not yet.
But maybe your attitude is the same as your dad's was, to let your children, if you have them, go their own way. But is it a hope that one day you might have another heir to the business?
Absolutely, that would be great. But as I really want to learn a lot about my experience and my possibilities that my father gave me or my parents gave me, that they never pushed me towards it and always gave me the free choice of coming back or not. And I think that's the right way to do it. I mean, if I would have thought that I would have been every single day when I was like 10 to 18 in the cellar or in the winemaking or in the viticulture, it would be great. I would have probably known much more about at this age. But, you know, it's important to see certain things from other perspectives, and not only from a wine perspective. And that's why it was for me is extremely important to learn or study sociology. And that's one of the most beautiful things my father said once to me, that he, after that I came back, and so a couple of months ago, he said, you know, the best thing what you could ever have done was studying sociology instead of economics or viticulture, winemaking, because these are the things that you can learn. But the things you can't always learn is dealing with people, you know. And if you work having a winery, we have 50 people working with us, and these kind of things, this interaction, this how, how building up teams, you know, these are the most important things about it, because trying to motivate everyone and passionate everyone. I mean, my father's not alone outside in the vineyard and deciding about biodynamic, and now we're going to, I mean, yes, he decides, but people need to understand it, and people need to know it, and people need to be motivated. And you can only do it if you know it about it, no? And so that was great, and I think I will always hope that if I at one point will have kids, that they will take over the winery in future. But first of all, they always need to go their personal path and go there in direction, and then decide if they want to come back or not.
It's an excellent attitude. For our listeners, if they would like to learn a little bit more about you online or about the winery, of course, online, how would they do that?
I mean, we have our homepage, aluslageda.eu. We have our Facebook, Facebook site? No, Facebook homepage.
Yep.
Also, Tenuta Alus Lageda. So these should be probably the best ways of, and your podcast.
Well, thank you.
That's very nice.
Great. Eloise, this was really wonderful. I really appreciate you taking the time today to talk, and I wish you nothing but success with
thank
the winery.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to had the possibility to talk a little bit about the winery. Thanks for this great opportunity, really. Thanks a lot.
To learn more, visit aluislegator.eu.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2016.